But yeah, so now we've got more of the county council and our lights up there, and then they have to decide whether they can, or they just want to take the.
She's on the commission, so she's up in the. Good thing. That's been enough work. A volunteer committee.
The bodies are very sort of jealous of their.
Politicians are territorial.
So, while this was the first one with the historic preservation commission, they do this for every single, we have 23 boards and commissions, and they're constantly. And then you have the design, just like.
You're like, no, you're not allowed to resign, we don't accept it.
Hey, about it, because.
Where are you?
That the phone here, why are you not resisting?
Okay.
My little girl, right?
Yeah, he went to the. So someone says, yeah, I'm gonna resign. Yeah. You're on the phone.
We have courtroom acoustics in here, so I can just pound on the table to get people's attention. All right, let's go ahead and get started. Welcome to the Clark County Historic Preservation Meeting. I hope nobody had a problem with the change of venue this evening, but it's going to be fun. We'll start out with some old business that we want to take care of first, just so that we can accommodate some members of the public that might be here. And then we'll get into the regularly planned agenda, which we'll start off with the Academy building here. And there'll be a short tour that we'll do before we get into that. So let's begin with roll call and introductions. I'm Robert Hines.
We'll Sean go around. McKinney.
Sarah Fox.
Alex Gall.
Sean Denniston.
Jan Bader.
John Wagner.
Jackie Camp.
All right. Let's begin tonight with approval of the minutes from the February 7th meeting. This should only take a moment.
April 4th.
I'm sorry?
April 4th. You didn't meet me.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry. April.
I just had one correction on page 3. It says new business. It says Sarah moved to forward with CLG grant, and then Sarah seconded. All were in favor. Just don't think I did both. I might have done both, but I don't think so. And I don't know who did which.
I think I seconded. Okay.
Robert, my name is
misspelled.
I'm sorry. You wouldn't know that normally, instead of the
N, it's
a U, as a guest.
Oh, okay. Got it. All right. Hopefully everybody had a chance to review the minutes of the last meeting prior to coming tonight. If not, please take a quick look, and I'll entertain a motion to approve those minutes when you're ready.
I move that we approve the minutes.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All right. The April minutes are approved.
Yeah, I feel a little nervous about something.
Yeah. Okay. As I just stated, we're going to jump forward into some of the old business and get an update on the poor farm.
Do you want to go to that first, or do you want to do the plaques discussion?
I thought you wanted to jump straight to the.
So this is kind of an update and proposal feedback request from the county. As you all remember, the Parks Department received a 2017 historical promotion grant for taking down the chain link fence and putting up a new split rail fence to go around the actual boundaries of the cemetery versus. And on May 4th, they had a public meeting with the public and the neighborhood adjacent, and there was discussion about the type of fence. And many people at that meeting were interested in a different style, which would be no fence at all, but a kind of monument markers on the corners of the boundaries. So the thought was, which is, you know, pretty accurate, that there probably was no fence there during the era of when burials were occurring. The county proposed that as a way so that people knew where the cemetery was, because there's no headstones, and there's no markers, there's no way to know where the boundaries are. So I put together just some pictures so you can see kind of the environment there, and then some examples of what the split rail fence was. I couldn't find any of what corner markers would be at a cemetery, but you know, if you kind of visualize what those may be, boulders or some kind of rock or bricks, something that would just do those corner markers. The other piece is there's discussion about, so the current chain link fence comes down from 78th Street and then kind of curves in where the cemetery is. And that's where it's currently dissecting. It's in the middle of the cemetery. So that fence has to move. And there's discussion as to whether to move it all the way to the western boundary, which is the property line, or the eastern boundary of the cemetery. So then it would be fenced off from the larger farm itself. So because this is on the Clark County Heritage Register, it would go before you for a certificate of appropriateness for the taking down that fence and moving in, putting up something. So before they got to that point of proposing doing a public hearing, they kind of wanted to see if you had any feedback from them on the fence style and the location. And this is just an ask for feedback.
Why do they need to keep that cycle fence?
The county and the farm is worried about the security of the farm.
From who?
People that come in, because it's still a research farm, so they're worried about the research agricultural uses having problems.
Was the county proposing leaving the fence up?
Leaving the fence up? Well, it's all the way around property.
Okay.
Now, but it does this dice, cuts in the cemetery.
Okay.
Want to keep the fence at least for security reasons.
But the decision to move this fence portion isn't going to keep people out of that cemetery.
So no, there will still be public access.
Right, so it's only one side of a cemetery, correct?
I mean, it would seem to make sense to keep the connection between the poor farm, the farm, and the cemetery open, and have the fence do the parcel line to the west. I mean, right, if the cyclone fencing is already doing the whole parcel, seem to make sense to keep. I mean, I think, don't we want people to have, if they're at the poor farm, to have access into the cemetery portion?
That is part of the master plan where, we're going to hopefully get this interpretive trail. That would be a part of the interpretive trail.
It seems strange. I wouldn't think cyclone fencing between the poor farm and the cemetery would serve it.
Well, it doesn't make any sense, and then it's also not consistent with DAHP's letter, that said basically don't do any digging. Digging's going to require some more archaeological work, right? So all of the other fence plans didn't involve digging.
I mean, these kinds of cemeteries are notorious for having very loose boundaries. I know that there was some ground penetrating radar work done. I don't know what the results of those were.
Yes, sir, but that was. We could tell that the cemetery flattened out. 13. I mean, when they did that work, that the anomalies were falling within the so, and then there was a survey recently.
Did they go outside the boundaries of the the established boundaries of the cemetery to see it? Because I mean, what I was saying is that they're notorious for having graves outside platted.
Right. I mean, I'll have to go back and look at the report on what the. Because they weren't sure where it was, so I assume they did a wider area to look at. And then using the cemetery flat, I was like, okay, this is where it was planned. And so they were pretty accurate as to where burials were. But we can get you more of that information.
Well, I'm just thinking about the idea of moving that cyclone fence is going to involve putting more holes in the ground.
That's where I landed too on this. If they want my recommendation, take it down but you don't move it anywhere. It just doesn't go back up again.
Are they going to have a problem with the security piece?
Well, except that a portion of that cemetery's, like you said, that fence is bisected. It never fully enclosed it in the first place.
Not the cemetery, but the rest of
the property. Well, that's why moving it to just outside the cemetery boundary along the western parcel boundary would be more feasible, I would think.
So this will come before the commission. I think we all want to have a chance to review it, right?
Yes,
so
we'll, you know, but they come up, you know, they wanted to see what, you know, fence style, do you have a thought on, you know, on the historic preservation side, what's appropriate there? Do either of those seem okay to you? Do you have any feedback for something else that you want to consider?
I haven't seen any designs. I'm sorry, go ahead, Sean.
Please finish.
But I haven't seen any designs. Are there some styles that are...
It's just a slip rail. She's
got some examples.
Something very simple. That would have been more of that era.
So the idea is that there was, am I understanding correctly, that there was a fence historically?
No,
so they're just...
They're trying to figure out a way to demarcate it for the public.
In that case, I would say that any pretend historic style fence is going to be inappropriate because it's going to create a false sense of historicity. And so whatever they choose needs to be something that is clearly not historic. And so either these choices or a similar rustic or, you know, old-timey fence is I think going to be most likely inappropriate. I mean, who knows, maybe they come up with something really perfect, but most likely I think it would be inappropriate. Corner markers, I think, are great. They're easy to differentiate. They don't confuse anybody. A modern fence that is sensitive to the area, I think, could be okay. You've got that excavation issue with that as well. If you're going to put a new fence in, about, you know,
That's a good point, Sean. I know that applies to building additions, but what you're saying is that those standards also apply to fencing and other parts.
Well, this is a landscape, and so you would apply the same basic principles to preserving a building that you would to a landscape. They have to be applied, but I think that it is an appropriate way to consider this.
That's a good point.
I think the only issue I have with just marking the corners would be, I guess, can you clearly see to each corner? You know, if there's vegetation or something in the way, then that again kind of ruins the whole point of delineation. So maybe something more like that, I think you mentioned boulders or something, maybe periodic boulders along the boundary or something that's...
Something that really stands out.
So you can see where that boundary is, because maybe just the corners won't do it.
Or they might think of a vegetative boundary as well. That's at least something to consider. When you're digging again, but...
No more digging.
Jackie, do you know why the fence bisects the property now?
I think it just was incorrectly placed a long time ago. And maybe it was a road that went off the cemetery. So maybe they just saw that as that must have been the boundary, because it was so overgrown and not kept up that I think they just assumed that was where the edge was.
And do we know how many actual grave sites are there?
Yeah, we did the research and we did the interpretive.
Yeah, I remember.
I think it's almost 200.
Yeah.
312.
That's how many plaque that was added, but I think from the research that was done,
and then are there, just because the city cemetery has graves all the way around for a huge, like in people's yards, are there all the graves confined to that, those red lines?
As far as we know.
So what you need is just kind of some more ideas to take back to the Parks Commission?
Yeah, I mean, just they wanted to kind of get a feeling for, do you prefer the split rail? Are you okay with the corner marker idea? So that they didn't come before you and you were like, I hate that, I'm not going with that at all. just to get some feedback on those will be helpful for them.
It doesn't sound like any of us are really fully supportive of a split rail. But...
Yeah, I think in general I agree with Sean's point. Anything that's kind of faux period would be inappropriate and inconsistent with preservation standards.
That makes sense.
It'd be another matter if it were a documented historic reconstruction of something that was there.
Right.
I mean, that'd be a totally different matter, but this is, you know, inventing a fence boundary with an invented fence style.
And we have no photographs from time past?
I mean, that being said, I think we'd like something that's sympathetic to the surroundings rather than a big vinyl fence from Home Depot or something like that,
yeah.
Right? So,
and that's the thing. I mean, like a split, without making any comments on the examples here, the historic breadth of a split rail fence is hundreds of years.
Yeah.
So it's not necessary, you know, I don't think the intent of the standard is to deliberately, you know, deliberately place something that would be impossible to, you know, I don't know quite how to word it. I know that's a touchy point, but.
Well, and then that's why I said that, you know, maybe they could come back with something and say, hey, yeah, that does work. And the fact that, you know, we're still installing new split rail fences, maybe they come up with a solution that really does work, but that would always be the danger of anything that was historic is that you get that full time look to it, and that is what is inappropriate.
One thing, like the zigzag, that's like a common, you see that a lot in a sheep fence. And I don't know if I've ever seen a cemetery that had a zigzag split fence.
Yeah, I don't think I have either.
And if that were the case, maybe that's an argument for it, just playing devil's advocate here a little bit, but just, I see things on both sides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the advantage to that is that it's easier to do that sort of on ground surface as opposed to the fence posts.
What about having, a metal fence, not metal, but, you know, triple coated, something with a glaze that would stand the test of time, just something to delineate it? What do historical cemeteries have? I'm trying to remember Arlington. Gettysburg.
They're either open or
iron.
Gettysburg had split rail, I remember.
So it gives you a general idea. It's going to come back before us, right?
This is before something is in discussion.
Pickets
would be worth
it. Lisa, I saw you had your hand up. Now, can we reserve? Are you going to stick around for the whole evening?
I'd love to stick around. If you want to leave
comment? Can we do that in the comment period?
Yeah, I was just
going to
share
period.
Some things, and I know Jackie had some things, but I assume you...
Unless you had, like, a little sound bite of a...
I'll do a 2-second soundbite, and then I'll say the rest. I just wanted to share that my research shows, I looked against the National Historic Standards, that they would have been open rolling hills, and if you walked back there, it's very picturesque. I know I had sent the pictures to Jackie today. And I also took some shots of just the fence to kind of give an idea of that cyclone fence, because it's not like the kind of fence you would put in the backyard. It is a security fence. But I'll save the rest of my comments. I just wanted to share the research since we're not making a decision tonight.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do we have any other guests this evening who are here for this, who maybe won't be sticking around?
Do you want to have them maybe give a comment on this now? So
if you were planning on leaving and we're just here for this one agenda item, otherwise we'd prefer to get...
Can I make a comment and just finish? Would you like to stay a couple more? I drove my
name. Oh, okay.
You want to stay? We're going to stay.
Okay. Okay. James, are you sticking around until the... Okay. All right, so we'll table the public comment until later then.
And Lisa was talking about she had provided these photos that are in the packet too, just so you can kind of see what that is. And I think what I would like to do is get you all out there for a site visit soon.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously before the hearing, but plan that well in advance to see the whole farm, to get a feeling for it, see the building, and check out the cemetery so that you guys can, you know, do the look and feel of it too. That will be forthcoming. Mm-hmm.
Great. Good idea. Let's see. Do we want to finish the old business now, or do you want to table that until we have a chance to do the tour and talk about the...
We can table it.
Okay. Okay. Let's do that in case there's anybody here for that. So next item on the agenda, we'll move forward to the Heritage Overlay Review, and that's regarding this site. So some of the buildings on this site are under scrutiny for possible demolition, and we've been invited this evening to have our meeting here, and that works out well because we all have an opportunity to go over there and tour the building. So maybe we can do a short tour at this time.
Does that work for you guys? All right. All right. Whatever Mike wants to share with us.
Can we just do a brief little introduction of the space?
Sounds good.
And do a little walk tour?
Yeah.
Sure.
So my name is Mike Trigg, president of the Historic Trust, the owner of the Providence Academy. We actually crossed off the third and final owner, just bought the building about 2 years ago from the Hinton family. Obviously, the Hinton family then dates back to making bricks for this building. So, with me is Corey Hyde, the facilities manager, Jessica England with Venerable Properties, who actually worked with us in our due diligence for the acquisition, and then Aaron Wygod with Marathon Development. So, we today are working on the feasibility, working with Aaron on potential development of the site, and really getting an understanding of how do we design the site plan for the site, and what are the options. Some of the work that we did, frankly, in the acquisition of the property with Venerable Properties is really looking at, can we save any of those historic buildings on the site other than the academy? So you've got the main Providence Academy building, built 1871-1873, National Register. You also have the laundry, boiler building. Connected to the boiler building is the smokestack, historic buildings built around 1910. Just south of those buildings is a small gymnasium building, which is a historic structure as well. And it is a small arts education school today. And the other building that's actually proposed for removal is the restaurant building just to the south of the construction here at the academy. Formerly El Presidente, it was actually Ron Century House in the 70s, and it was the last El Presidente. That is a non-historic structure. Really our goal would be to open up that whole southern landscape of the building. So I think the goal to start out is, that's just a little bit of background. The goal to start out is just to give you a little bit of a tour maybe of the space, and maybe on our way to the buildings that are proposed for demolition, and we'll cruise upstairs and I'll show you the chapel in this building. This is because it's really one of the most characteristic features of this building, really unique to the space. So if you haven't been in this building before, the chapel is beautiful. We can stop in the chapel and give you a piece of history, and then, because I know we're limited on time, we'll step over to the laundry boiler. We would be happy to lock this room up. If you want to leave anything in here, we'll make sure it's fully locked.
doesn't have a choice on the line.
There are some, here's some just pictures of that interpretive plot that was put on the corner of C Street and Evergreen. That were funded by the commission, so thank you. And quite often when you drive by, you see people actually standing there waiting for the crosswalk reading that interpretive piece. So it's great to have an educational piece for the public.
So Corey, this used to be my favorite coffee shop. Is there water that we have over there?
You know what? We have, you know what? When Corey comes back, let me see if I can
find her here. Okay.
Thank you for being willing to take a tour today and see the building.
Thank you for sharing that.
Really interesting. We appreciate it.
Willing. There would have been a riot if you didn't let us.
you have this, right?
If, and I will offer this up to you. If you have a desire to see more of this building or the site, we've got a basement of this space, three floors, a full attic, and a whole lot of stories and history. So I'd be happy to give you a personal tour of the space and take you throughout in much more detail. But today, I was instructed to be brief. And in looking at the agenda, we had to be very brief. So with that, I guess we'd be looking for instruction on how you guys would like us to proceed.
So if everyone's ready, I'll turn over to John. Yep. Trying to get everyone introduced to get this part started.
Okay. We've been through these before. This is a project that's in one of our districts. And so what we do is anytime anything happens within this district, regardless of whether it's on our register or the National Register, we ask the commission to give us feedback on what the applicant of the way. What I've essentially done is taken the applicant's comments and put them in an overview. And what I really like to do is just turn it over to them and have them explain to you what their plans are, what they're looking at now. I do want to make it clear that this request is for the removal of the buildings. When the time comes for the whatever new development happens, it is it's overlay district, so that too will come back to this commission for comment. What I've been looking at is if you make thoughts on what we should look at as far as if the buildings are so far gone they cannot be maintained, what sort of document we be looking at. I have a pretty good idea of what some of the things we did with when we took down one of the dormitories at the blind school. It was I can't ever remember the name of it, but it's an American Heritage.
Oh, the hats there.
Yeah. Yeah. So that would be one of the things we would talk about. So having said that, the applicants got basically the same presentation. And I'd like to just turn it over to them.
Okay. Well, I'm going to take things to begin with, and maybe we'll have Mike and Aaron fill in a little bit here. But again, I am Jessica Eamon. I'm a historic preservation consultant from Portland. As Mike said, I was involved with this property in 2012 when they were doing their due diligence, and they brought in my firm because we have kind of a unique specialty of being developers who are historic preservationists and really understand buildings and understand the economics of historic buildings. I teach historic preservation economics at U of O. So they brought us in for our expertise to look at this site and to look at these buildings. So I have kind of that depth of knowledge, and that's why I'm back here in 2017 to this team when the question came up of demolition. So I have up here those that were in your packet so that we can reference those as we have questions, but mostly I'm going to go kind of through the high points of the narrative, and I prepared this with their input. So a lot of this comes from my own experience with these two buildings and the findings that came out of the feasibility study in 2012. So we talked about, so the laundry building from 1873, similar vintage to the academy building. And you know, it was really designed as a utility facility, which oftentimes historic buildings that were built for a very specific utility type use in and of themselves can be a little bit challenging to reuse, And then this, of course, has several other factors that make it quite challenging. Number one being the condition. And I think a lot of the issues were probably pretty self-evident as you were going through the building, but just to call out some of those that I put in this narrative, of course, we have the failed roof and the gutters. The water has been getting into the buildings for decades, which has really impacted the wood structure that's within those masonry walls. We have failing brick and deeply weathered joints. All of that interior machinery, open trenches, and hazardous materials that are in there. There's no usable mechanical equipment, so electrical, plumbing, all of that would have to be brand new if those buildings were to be restored. Of course, the stairways would have to be replaced. Really, the interior finishes, the plaster, the wood. That we saw the bone floors, the soft and spongy floors, and the attic is partial height. So in terms of reasonable or usable square footage, that the attic wouldn't be part of that. So reuse challenges, condition, number one. Number two would be the fact that any restoration of these buildings would trigger a change in use, which would bring on a full seismic upgrade. And as Mike mentioned, that's a pretty major intervention where, kind of best case scenario, there would sort of be a new wood structure, so to speak, that would be built within those masonry walls, which would have to then be tied back to the wood structure, and then all of the masonry repointed and replaced where it's in too far gone of a condition. And then, of course, ADA, the step-up entries needing to have ADA-compliant bathrooms and an elevator in that building, which gets to the next major hurdle for kind of a financially feasible reuse, which is that we have a long and skinny building, which creates a bit of an awkward floor plate if you were going to, say, carve it up into smaller offices or something like that, having to fit into exit stairs, an elevator, ADA restrooms, potentially a corridor, your leasable square footage at the end of the project, compared with the monumental cost to basically reconstruct the building, makes zero financial sense. And I can say that as a developer who's worked on numerous buildings that were very challenging to finance and yet didn't have, you know, attend to the problems that these buildings have. So that's the boiler is sort of a similar situation that we're dealing with. Obviously, you saw the missing room, the interior. That old boiler is very cool, but there's hazardous materials related to that. And again, you know, usable mechanical systems, no restrooms, things of that nature. In addition, we've got the stack, which is really an unprecedented structure, but the seismic upgrade requirements to reinforce a stack like that are incredibly expensive. In 1999, in Portland, those of you who are familiar with the Brewery Blocks that are near Powell's, Gertie and Evelyn, they did reinforce that stack as part of this major multi-million-dollar rehabilitation. And I believe in 99, it was about $500,000 to do the seismic upgrade for just the stack. So some really big dollar hurdles there. The restaurant is obviously we're not really talking about feasibility with the restaurant, more the removal of the restaurant restores the integrity of the whole Providence site and allows for that sort of landscape to be brought back and then to be brought back. So these are kind of the high points. I know that some folks had more questions about economics, and I did put some numbers in here which we can certainly talk to, but given that, you know, we spent a lot of time on the tour, I want to make sure I'm getting information that is helpful for you guys and answering your questions. So unless Mike and Aaron have any more that they would like to throw in at this point, I mean, just to quote the numbers, perhaps, if you guys didn't have a chance to read all of this, that escalating the construction costs we got in 2012, we were looking at a rough order of magnitude cost of about $2.5 million or $420 per square foot to save the laundry building. and about $1.2 million or $665 a square foot for the boiler building. And that's just for construction costs. That doesn't include soft costs, architects, you know, construction loan fees, any of those other things that are needed to execute a redevelopment project.
The only thing I'd add to that is, I've kind of put that in the context as it relates to this building, that, you know, for the last 40 years has been managing the 5-gallon bucket program in the attic, and the amount of lath and plaster ceilings that have been compromised and come down in the third floor of the space because of how badly this building is deteriorated. And so we're desperately working to try to save this building, and I'm determined to do so, and I'm pleased that we're in that first phase of the roof renovations in here. And so, you know, campus-wise, it is just a massive undertaking to pursue this laundry boiler building when we've got this gem of a building that needs such a substantial investment in itself.
We can go through the pictures real quick. So we just obviously did the site plan with the green resources to be proposed for demolition, with the academy and the gymnasium staying. So we have these elevation photos, very similar to what you saw today of the laundry and the boiler. Again, with the significant roof masonry, you know, all the windows are completely, windows and doors completely deteriorated. Go to the next one. That's north elevation. Just kind of go to the next one. And south. Next one. And so we do have some photos of the second floor. So these will look familiar to what you saw today on the ground floor. These are the stairs that Mike was talking about, and I think they're actually in the worst condition today. This might have been a photo I pulled out from 2012. The next slide. So this is on the ground floor, so those were spaces that we were in. Next slide. So this is going upstairs. So this is another one of the stairwells. So you can see the condition from two different locations, and you can see that the second floor is as bad, if not worse, upstairs in terms of the water damage, the plaster damage, and just the general condition of the second floor. Next slide. And this shows the partial height attic, which you can barely stand up straight in there. And just another photo of some of the impact of the water coming in over the decades. And those should look very familiar. And I think the last slide is just kind of a historic building. It shows the views and the landscaping without the restaurant building, and what we would hope that the level of integrity that is sort of the intent of taking that restaurant building away, and the views, they just show that it's not been the best thing to have that restaurant in front of this beautiful historic building.
And so if I understand the overall premise here, it's that the project financially, really to restore this building here, requires that you sort of give up on trying to save the laundry building and those buildings. Is that correct? What you're trying to do here?
I would just say it's in context of this campus that there's such a significant amount of investment needs to go in this building. To try to put additional investment in that laundry boiler building at the dollar per square foot that it is, with the challenging economic return, is a struggle from a financial sense. And obviously this building does not contribute the funding to make the capital improvements necessary to the space. And it was a very, very difficult capital campaign associated with the acquisition of this building. It's still very difficult to try to secure funding for the renovation of this building. And I just don't see us being able to secure funding to be able to renovate these other structures and their liability in their current form today.
Mm-hmm. So one of the questions I had when I looked at this, I didn't seem to have too much, I guess I didn't question too much the demolition of the two buildings because of their condition, their shape, and also, you have to have them at a certain level of safety if you're going to have people back in them. But the one that I was wondering more about is the smokestack, because in the report that was submitted, I thought maybe this had been prepared by an engineer, but it said that the smokestack's in fair condition and requires some repointing of the brick. And then it says, however, because the masonry is unreinforced, it poses a significant seismic risk in its current state. And what I was wondering is, why would it need to be seismically reinforced if it's not going to be occupied? It's just a feature on the property.
Well, I think part of the concern is that if there is development on that part of the site, that would pose a risk to anyone who's out on the site, as well as any buildings that were surrounding it if it wasn't seismically upgraded.
Well, Chapman School in Northwest Portland is the site of thousands of Vaux Swifts every fall in September. And I think they were going to tear that one down at one point, and then they saved it. And I just was trying to Google it. I'm pretty sure it hasn't been seismically upgraded. And there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people around that school with all their little kids every single September were there. So I don't know that, I mean, I think that Sarah has a good point. Does that actually have to be seismically upgraded
to avoid demolition? From a code perspective, in terms of a trigger, and maybe John can speak to this, that if the approval of the boiler building demolition was granted, since it's not a habitable structure, that I'm not sure if there's a nexus where there would be an actual code trigger. Mm-hmm. It's just a question of the ownership's comfort with, you know, that level of risk on the property.
It just seems that's fairly iconic to the property. You see it on the highway. People have seen that for 100 and something years.
That's where I was kind of going to, is that's the thing you see from other places in town. You know, if you, that's the structure you see, and then the name on that smokestack. And without having plans in front of us of what's being proposed around that, you know, it seems premature to demolish it unless it was immediately threatening. You know, I mean, we have a lot of probably unreinforced buildings out there that haven't fallen.
We're sitting in one.
And yeah, so that to me just struck me as unnecessary at this time until we know what the rest of the plan is, if there really is something sensitive, or could you have landscaping at a certain distance around that tower that at least people would have time to take a run for it when that thing starts crumbling. I don't know.
Yeah. Are they being considered as three separate structures? Or?
So that our engineers, and we didn't dig too deep into it, but he had concerns initially with, and I'm Aaron Weigand from Marathon Development, and we'd be the ones that would go ahead and develop the remainder of the site, that you wouldn't be able to necessarily remove the boiler building and retain the smokestack, and that they were constructed as one building. So that would be an issue as well. And then the other issue is, of course, that we would have buildings within proximity, close proximity to the stack itself. So from the city's perspective and the insurance perspective, and just our comfort of the safety of that stack would be an issue.
What kind of buildings would be close to the stack?
Multifamily.
So does your economic analysis account for the economic loss of that smokestack? Because there's only a certain number of those things still standing in the area. They are iconic, they're free advertising, they are one of the identifying elements of this site as far as being able to lease this site. And one of the, you know, defining elements, I would say, this building is certainly, if you've got the list of defining characteristics, you know, the historical significance, the architectural significance, but that stack, I'd say, is actually one of those items and a significant item on that list. So if you're looking at the economic analysis of taking out all these buildings, there is both the demolition cost, but there is the economic cost of removing that to the rest of the site. That I think before we can really say that there's a hardship should be quantified somehow. As I'm looking at it, it seems like there are four things with varying levels of significance to the site. You know, there's El Presidente, which I would say is a negative significance to the site, and I'm very happy to hear that that could be going away. I think that the site would be improved significantly by that. Then there's the laundry, then there's the boiler room, and there's the smokestack. And I think that each of them has a different level of significance attached to them for the site, and that those things should be considered. The fact that there isn't a plan for redevelopment right now, I think, is actually problematic, because, you know, an economic analysis is usually based on, you know, if, okay, you're going to take it out, then there's the replacement, and there's the cost of the replacement, and you can compare that to the cost of refurbishment. But also, just making that building a building again is not the only option for it. I mean, just walking around that site, I could see you actually take the top off that building and you invert it, and you turn it into a courtyard and you build your building around it. You know, and then you have all of those, that fabric that can be used to give that extra punch to the new construction. Well, maybe that's not feasible either. I mean, it's an option, but if the building is taken down, then it's no longer an option to even be considered. So if, I know that our authority here is limited, we can hopefully just convince you of certain things.
We can make recommendations.
Exactly. But I would strongly encourage as limited demolition as possible. El Presidente, get rid of it.
We are all in favor of that. I'm
but,
sure.
But
I'm making a motion in a second. Again.
But as I look at the state of that heavy masonry wall, I mean, yes, there's a couple of flaws, but there's no buckling, there's minimal spalling, there's actually, I'm surprised at how little efflorescence there is. Those walls are in better shape than half the masonry buildings that are occupied in Philadelphia right now. And so the fact that the engineer is saying that it's very poor and then only calling the smokestack fair when the rest of the building has been very poor, but the brick is actually in rather surprisingly good shape. I only saw two places where you had differential settling that created a crack. So if there is a way to, well, actually I know that there's a way, you can take the roof off, you can conserve the tops of the walls and keep them, at least for now, until maybe there is a plan that would work for those. And I think that kind of minimal demolition, if you have to go down that road, and I understand $400 a square foot just does not work, but until you can until you can examine some of the more creative solutions that you might be able to use beyond just trying to shove offices in that space, I think minimizing the amount of demolition that you do is really, should be a priority. I mean, that boiler, I could see a little patio space called the boiler room, the people would love to sit with this whole boiler in that space, open to the air, or with a new structural, roof over it where you're just seeing those old walls. I mean, there's lots of things that can be done like that. And like I said, maybe they don't work, but if you tear it down, you'll never find out.
This used to be a coffee shop. And the problem, and there were always people coming and going out of this coffee shop. I was one of them. But the problem was you had to walk up the stairs. I mean, people on their way to work, they don't have time to navigate this old building. But something outside that you could just kind of walk up to and walk out. There's a place in by Chinatown that has kind of exactly what I was thinking of. It doesn't have the stack, but it has, they demoed the roof, they demoed the tops of the walls, and then they preserved it. And it's the coolest space in that whole blockage area. So I don't know what could be done, but I would like to see the stack considered and then maybe have the courtyard. And maybe you make a green space out of the laundry building. I don't know.
But I think we ought to stick to the demolition, not get too far, suggesting future plans. I think we ought to focus. I got one question, though, is do you guys have a proposal for any kind of mitigation for the demolition? Level of documentation that is being proposed or anything like that?
Well, certainly when we met with John, he had suggested HABs, and I think that we would be on board with that. We would love some clarification. I mean, I think there's different levels of doing HABs, so, we'd be looking to hear what your recommendation or expectation would be as far as how far we want to see that HABs documented.
Yeah, Jessica, you share Sean's academic mastery of historic preservation issues. So I know you're familiar with a lot of the remedies that he's proposing and a lot of the different options and how they've been employed in different parts of the country. So I think the message here is that we'd like you to keep a very open mind to that and any ways that we can possibly mitigate this to the fullest extent possible. Mike, you made a comment about how it's been a challenge to get funding for this project. Is that, are you speaking specifically about commercial funding, or have you even tried reaching out to private donors who might have an interest in preserving this feature as well?
No, I think that's actually a great question.
You know, got that big ad on your property.
Well, I mean, frankly, we engaged very strongly in a philanthropic campaign for the acquisition of the space. That was very driven by private donations, grants, and actually no public funding in the actual acquisition. There was some public funding for the renovation, first phase of the renovation of this project. And in reality, we have raised less than a third of the funding that's needed for this whole project, including acquisition. It's just been very, very difficult.
But is the funding coming from speculative investors or from philanthropists?
From philanthropists.
Okay.
No, I mean, it's philanthropists that maybe have an interest in historic preservation, philanthropists that may have an interest in Providence Health Systems, may have an interest in the use of this as a school or an orphanage, and it's and as part of their faith. And so there's several different strands of that campaign.
Okay. I have one other comment on the El Presidente restaurant, because no one's speaking out for it here.
I was
up in Ellensburg several weeks ago, and I got to hear Michael Hauser from DAP give a lot of speeches talking about, you know, how some of these late additions become part of the story of the property. I don't know if this is a story better forgotten, but there is an argument to make that there's a little bit of a story to the El Presidente building, but no, I think that historic photo that you showed of kind of the open garden there and the view that you had, if that were restored, that would be beautiful and actually add to the community.
Just to clarify, Mike, you said that the boiler building was 1910, and then you said it was 1873.
Sorry, I started out by giving dates and then I didn't follow through with each of the structures. So approximately 1873 for the laundry and about circa 1910 for the boiler and the stack.
Okay. Those are correct dates.
And then 1976 for the restaurant.
What's that?
1976 for the El Presidente.
Oh, yeah. We're beyond all that. And then the gymnasium building?
About 1930.
Yeah, it's significant. I've been in that building and it's significantly different. And what are the plans for the gymnasium building? Is the preschool going to stay?
Yeah, so currently, their current tenants in the building. They have no indication or show no indication of moving. You know, I would. I wish that building was a little bit more, had a different exterior appeal to it that was consistent to the site. I think we're probably relatively limited on what we can do with that space.
But no plans to change it or alter it.
Would you like a motion or something from our group on?
I'm trying to get some clarification. Okay.
But no
plans for today.
I think I would just say one last thing, which is that, you know, there is that economic loss as you are trying to, you know, fundraise for this site, that the removal of those buildings could actually negatively impact those efforts. And I think, especially any part that's iconic, like the stack, I think could significantly negatively impact. I think there could be I think you run the risk of fostering animosity within the community, because, you know, Portland's got their couple of iconic stacks still standing. You know, there's, my brother manages the steam plant in Spokane. I mean, that's the only thing that's kept that building alive is those twin stacks.
That's a beautiful place up there, but.
And so, you know, I think its loss is rather significant, and so I think that's another reason for a kind of staged demolition, that, you know, to maximize the opportunities to preserve as much as possible for the value that they have, and including the economic value.
Very well said. Feedback. Thank you.
Heritage tourism is a thing now. Mm-hmm.
All right, John, you want to wrap it up, or?
Yeah, what I heard from the commission, I'll start with using El Presidente, does not seem to be an issue. The main concern is the smokestack, that it's an iconic structure that can be saved, should be saved. regardless of the other couple of other structures, the possibility of turning those into some sort of feature incorporated in a new development. I believe the open garden enclosure was the idea that I heard.
You're just talking about the boiler one, right, though, not the lawn.
Well, I was just saying that there are some creative solutions that could be pursued, but if the buildings are gone, they can't.
And then we talked a little bit about the historic and the building surveys. Is that about what we talked about?
What was that last part? I didn't hear the last part.
Oh, the surveys.
Okay. The document.
The document they have to build.
That's what I heard.
And so there was the Diaz in there and the tables, and those will be inventory.
Oh, all those
items. We talked about that.
Exactly. I mean, there's some historically significant fixtures that are in there, or just personal property in there that would be removed before anything would be done with that space.
When was that Diaz moved? Because it wasn't in the picture, and it was out there today.
You know, I think it was just under a bunch of junk, and it was moved about... it was probably moved about 4 or 5 years ago.
So some of those pictures were from the 2012
Yeah.
Listed.
Christian, anything else?
I think I just heard that we're not that opposed to the demolition of the buildings, but maybe a more creative reuse of the buildings. That's maybe the little distinction I heard.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many ways to go about...
Rather than to reuse,
I mean,
them for,
you know,
occupancy.
The idea of dismantling versus demolishing versus, you know, reuse of materials and, you know, trying to salvage some portion of it. And, you know, I mean, there are lots of options to... And I feel like we're being asked to sort of decide on a yes or no on demolition. But, you know, Sean's brought up the fact that, you know, there are... sort of a spectrum of options that really could be considered to minimize the loss that would be experienced by just total demolition of all three. You know, and then from my perspective, I feel like there's a certain amount of recordation that needs to occur before any demolition or dismantling or repurposing happens. And, you know, that's my particular interest because I'm just finding that there's so much demolition happening around the city and the county that doesn't get caught. These permits get issued, and these historic structures are just getting torn down really quickly with no documentation. So, you know, something like this, a total landmark, you know, especially that smokestack, I think, you know, everybody feels connected to that smokestack, and for good reason. And, you know, that's the reason we have this commission, to voice that connection. So I don't know, are we being asked to just give a thumbs up, thumbs down on demolition?
No. Feedback.
Feedback, okay. So and is this our last chance to provide feedback?
For the demolition, probably.
Okay.
And if you did move forward with demolition, if city planning went that route, and you went on to other mitigation measures, would you come back to the commission and ask for input? Okay.
What was that last part?
If there are mitigation measures that we come up with as we work through this, whatever
yeah.
goes back to the commission, I don't.
Yeah, I'm not super familiar with your process. So you would make some sort of decision and a recommendation of mitigation, and then does it come back?
It doesn't necessarily.
Okay.
The way this is set up is really strange. it's not on our register, it's on the national register. So.
Yeah.
Certificate of appropriateness. This area is one of two areas in the city that we define as historic overlays. Anything that happens in those, whether it be, you know, putting in new windows on a building that may not even be contributing factor, if it's in that area, it comes like here for comment and review. But the commission doesn't get a chance, doesn't have the authority to make the decisions. I don't know why, but that's the way this has been written for at least 30 years that I know.
Politically, that's how they got the ordinance through.
You can always appeal a decision. Those
yeah.
are those are your other avenues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
not
what
say
we
want
to do is try to work with everyone concerned, make this the best possible solution we can come up with. So the question is, if, in talking over amongst the staff, the comments that were made here lead us to some sort of mitigation ideas, I'd like to discuss those with the applicants, and I'd like to know if that commission and let them know where we are. And again, the commission would really have the opportunity to say yes or no to them, but we appreciate the feedback.
Well, it sounds like you've established some sort of a framework for what that mitigation would look like, just in some of these discussions with regards to recordation.
And then what about community input? I mean, we're getting community input on the fence around the Poor Farm Cemetery. I would think that we might want to do that for the...
Well, there will be a CEQA that will have to be required for this.
There'll be a what?
Environmental policy review before any kind of demolition would take place that has to go out.
So DAP consultation will be built into the process.
It should be, yes. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
And I did send a letter off to Mike. They must be really, really busy because
they are.
He gets back to me sometimes just months later.
And that's part of the actual permit process.
Yes, the demolition permit will involve state environmental policy act. The building's over 45 years old.
But see, that doesn't automatically trigger.
Trigger what?
Well, demolition permits don't trigger SEPA. I mean, that's what's happening in the county, is that all these over 50-year-old structures are getting demolished with no review.
No.
Oh, but this one.
That's the truth. If that's what the county's doing, I'm misreading the SEPA documentation or the SEPA regulations. SEPA requires for demolition of any building, it would require a SEPA to build it, that it go through SEPA to take it down. So in other words,
but a single family residence
would be less than, but a building such as this would require, literally, if it's over 20,000 square feet and you want to take it down, it requires a SEPA program.
I can think of at least 10 historic houses that were torn down in the last year, but they're single family residences.
And so that would be those, because those don't necessarily require a SEPA for that review. Although there are provisions that SEPA will talk about, but it's over 45 years old, which is supposed to consider it. We had a similar issue when Burkerville down there went out. They made the ARCO, since it's over 50 years old, it has to go through SEPA. They got it at the 49 years.
Just like you taking down El Presidente before it hits 50.
Yeah.
I can serve you one last dinner in there.
No, thank you.
All right. Well, overall, a good project. Wish you luck, and we hope you can do the best you possibly can to save some of those features.
Thank you.
And property.
Very much value the feedback. We appreciate you hearing that tonight. And thank you, Sean, specifically for your encouragement.
All right. Well, let's We did the Poor Farm Cemetery fence update already. National Register building for potential plaques. It's covered. Yeah. Do you want to discuss potential plaques?
Yes. So I think last meeting, I was in front of you. And I don't think any decisions were made. So I had some ideas for trying to maybe help make some
decisions. Are they arranged in any order?
I don't think so. I think they are more maybe by date listed.
Oh, I thought you figured that out. So
last year, right, you did the courthouse plaque, county courthouse, the farm, the Lukey building, and the Kickigans, as they were most recent National Register listings that were under your all review. So you had said that you still had an interest in maybe doing some more of those for National Register properties. So the list is there. There may be some on there that already have plaques, and I will start researching and making sure. I think I have a good idea probably where to start looking. But I think about how best we could fix the whole county. So maybe looking at some of the historic sites that are public accessible throughout various parts of the county, and the way we have one. Yakult, Woodland, I don't know if the Cedar Creek Gristmill has a plaque. So that's kind of how I was thinking it through. So I kind of wanted to give you those kind of ideas to maybe help maybe make a short list of possible ones that we could consider ordering.
I think we need to put it in smaller font.
Small.
This is the perfect application for an intervention matrix. So we can identify the important features, you know, the important things that we're trying to accomplish, and then give each of them a score that, you know, corresponds to how it goes to that. And then at the end you just say, all right.
Okay.
We do the ones at the top, you know, the top score is the ones we start with.
Score matrix.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, whether it's open to the public is a good one.
Okay.
Geographic distribution, you know, for underrepresented areas is a good one. I think maybe a factor of, hey, this one hasn't gotten much attention would be a good.
Well, yeah, we also need to know if they already have plaques.
Yeah, do they already have some?
And if they still exist, like the art prune dryer, I don't think is still there. Doesn't mean it can't get a plaque.
Well, I'd like to say, so we maybe need to develop that because, you know, I'm all for matrix and I like to do them on any of them.
In your free time.
Yeah, I do. For the grants, you know, that's what I put together too. I resorted my own scoring system so that I could evaluate them as objectively as possible. But the open to the public category, I guess, is why I'm raising the question, is because that might cut out a lot of the areas outside of Vancouver. And I don't think that's necessarily an important criteria, because our whole point is to get people to drive around and take a look at these, and they can look at them. A lot of these are in the downtown areas of, if you go up to, you can see the Cedar Creek Grist Mill, from the road almost,
Maybe accessible to the public.
Yeah, but the sign, if we're putting them in signs.
But then it's open to the public.
Well, okay, bad example. How about, I just say, like the Ledbetter House in campus. You wouldn't want to put it on the house, let's say, because that would require people to drive up. But you could put a sign right on the road, and that road, being a planner from Camas, maybe I shouldn't advocate on its behalf, but that road is someday going to become a public trail. So now you've even made it, that's the sign and
this
location.
Is this a plaque, they have here, or is it something different?
In some of these cases, we might be thinking of a small sign that would be next to the road or next to the sidewalk or something rather than on the building. That's a thought.
Because a lot of our buildings that are on the register are private residences, so some people may not want come up to my door.
Right, but they might want something on their fence, if they have a fence or something, but something where, they pull out our app, they're going for a drive, and, we found it, there it is, there's a little sign there, something where, clearly, we're not asking that people enter their property, but just the raise that visibility, I guess, would be the what I would be going for, is just to make it even more, or they've discovered it because they're out on a walk and they've come across this, on the side of the fence or something.
A lot of people who know or are interested in this stuff can see one of those National Register plaques. They don't necessarily need to read it, because all it says is this thing's on the National Register. So even if it's not open to the public and it's stuck on the house, people aren't going to feel the need or interested in this thing to walk up to get up right up there. It's like, oh, the National Register. Oh. The idea of putting one on a fence.
Yeah, that's a permanent idea. But something more creative.
Yeah.
I think that at least public visibility is certainly important. If it's going to be public funds going to it, that it's something that the public can benefit from. But I do think that open to the public is a value. I think it being the sole criterion, I don't think is necessary. But that's the nice thing about a scoring matrix, is that you can score low in one place and score high everywhere else.
Okay, well, I'll put something together then for the next meeting and send it to y'all beforehand so you can kind of do your own scoring.
I think we can call out the ones that are A, don't exist, right. Or don't
doesn't exist. -5.
You already have a plaque, or for one reason or another.
You can
How many are we talking about, Jackie?
What's that?
How many are we talking about? I mean, what's the how much funding do we? We only did 4 last time, so we're acting like this is some huge project. But
right.
Is it?
I'd probably say
what is a huge
about 4.
It is a huge project.
We allocated pretty much most of the budget already this year. Yeah. So.
But if it's, you know, when we talked about it before, it was this idea that it could be something that we could do a few more
every year.
So this allows us to keep, you know, and to integrate new sites as they're nominated into the matrix and just, you know, keep working our way down.
I like the idea of something at the street. I think I told the commission last year, Hallowell, Maine has all of those placards in front of all, and the kids, the old people walk around and read them. It's a great, and part of our mission here is to educate, so.
I mean, does anybody know about the basalt quarries district?
Yes. I mean, I didn't know. I was
use a plaque. It's made of basalt.
It's about Jim, what were you saying? Sending it out beforehand.
Oh, why don't you send it out beforehand and have people send the scores back ahead of time, then you can have it all tallied up by next week.
That works for you guys?
Be a faster
can you email us this?
I'll put together a matrix so that you'll have, you know, ways to score it. Maybe I'll work with Sean on, you know, the best way to do that.
I've done a lot.
Okay.
Matrix matrices in my days.
Okay, so that we'll do that next time and get those going so we're not going to put in the year to order.
That'd be good.
That was not a holiday fun night. Okay, so the last thing on old business, I didn't know, Robert, if he wanted to, if you had anything to talk about.
Yeah, sure. So we talked about this last year, and I've brought it up a couple of times over the months. But the Hillborn Archives are up there at the Washington State University Vancouver Library. They are visited. Michael Hauser actively refers people down there to Wazoo to look at them. Now, they're just technical drawings, I've been informed. So I talked to them and I said, okay, great, we'd like to see them. The first step is going to be to identify some target properties so that they can actually pull out the drawings and then have a look at them and then decide how we could maybe put together some type of an exhibit in keeping with our mission, sort of educate the public and promote historic preservation in the community. So this seemed like a good cause, a good opportunity to do that. So I have a list of target properties. I sent that to Rock because he's been in touch with them also. And I think I sent it to you, Sean, and you got it, Rob, a list of what they have. So. I forwarded that on to the architects on the commission just to see if there was anything that jumped out at them. I haven't got any ideas specifically, but that what we'll do is we'll identify a few target properties. We'll go take a look at the drawings, a couple of us, and then kind of see what we need to do to put together some kind of inexpensive but good exhibit on Hillborn. And maybe go down to the historical museum and pull out some old photographs or something like that, and we can present those. So that's the idea. That's the concept. WSU is excited about the idea. Michael Hauser is excited about the idea. I talked to him in Ellensburg as well. So it's moving forward. It's still in the scoping stage.
I think some target properties would be really useful. I looked through the inventory and I was like, well, I don't recognize that building. I don't recognize that building. I don't know what that is. So I think that it'd be helpful if, you know, maybe someone who's a little bit more familiar can say,
yeah,
that's still around or that was really interesting.
I'll forward those on to everybody on the commission.
It was a bit of a list I started to read through. I was like, oh my goodness, I don't have the time. So
yeah, it's a long list. I wasn't really expecting that.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, this is not my expertise. So, good luck with that, everyone. I will just be supportive.
Just second it.
I will.
And I think that for a display, I almost think that the other materials that are available might dictate which of those materials to use.
Right.
We have the pictures of this project, so we compare the drawings from this project with that. I think that would make a pretty big difference to
right.
the selection.
And my understanding is that they're not in a flat file or in a tube. They are kind of folded up in large envelopes, so they're in various condition. So,
do you have any plans to digitize them?
They can do that. It's something that we'll talk about more. And that's one way that we could do it. We could just get copies of the drawings. We don't necessarily need to get...
I mean, I digitize my personal selections when it was possible.
Yeah. Now, I'm sure if there's the funding and interest, I'm sure they would love to do that. But right now, it's all paper. Mm-hmm. It's all just in boxes. So that's what's going on with that. Shall we move on to new business and announcements, Jackie?
Yeah. I know Sarah had mentioned maybe a quick debrief on the Revitalize Washington conference that a few of you attended.
Mm-hmm. Let everyone know. I've been to probably three or four of these now, and my other life is an urban planner, so I'd say this is one of the better conferences that they've put together. Dynamic speakers. A couple of the sessions, I know that Shell and I were at one of them where they had a presentation by a teacher who mm-hmm. who really engaged the students in the area with historic preservation, and the students were giving tours throughout the conference to the town, telling all these stories. So really amazing the way this teacher was able to bring speakers into the classroom and teach these kids really how to do research. I mean, I saw through his class the life lessons he was teaching that go way beyond just the Historic Preservation Commission. The fact that the kids got up and just spoke about what they knew too, they were excited about it. So that was really cool. That was a highlight for me listening to him. Let's see, what are the highlights? There's a lot of, I did a few walking tours too of the town, and really to hear again the property owners speak again about the power of what the state of Washington offers for the programs, the tax benefits, and just making the case to what I'd say, maybe a room full of people that most of them were more Main Street, because it's a combined conference of Main Street, so you had more business owners maybe that worked and owned buildings on Main Street, to give them such a convincing talk about why they should list their buildings, and just the cost difference over 10 years that they can't beat with these tax breaks. That was pretty cool. So just some real powerful speakers. So, you guys want to say what hit you?
I was at the same speech that Robert was at, and Doug Houser got up there and was showing basically all these preservation efforts nationally and the history of it. And one of the things that he was showing us these pictures of malls, which completely bore me. And he was saying that what we should do is go out and take pictures of everything, because he was even showing that, Meyer and Frank in the Westfield is now gone. And I'd never thought of that, I should have gone and take a picture. I do that anyway, but now I've upped my efforts just to take pictures of historic properties, because they are going very quickly from our communities. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And then I was at the one with all the kids, and we did the walking tour. My daughter went, and it was, some of these kids are going to be historic preservationists when they grow up. I mean, they said this. And I kept thinking, how could we take that, teacher's vision and the way he implemented it and bring that here? And I've actually got his phone number. I'm going to talk to him some more. But so there was that. And then we took the railway tour because the other tours were full. And we visited all of these old depots. Some of them were from 1880. And the main depot there, right there in Ellensburg, they've had all kinds of attempts over the years to revitalize it that have failed. And they finally, a guy went away, a businessman, made his millions, came back. He's putting $2.5 million of his own dollars into that railway. And I think the state is giving him $1 million, somebody is. And so we went toward that, and that was really interesting. And so I've seen all of the railway depots all the way up to almost the north. Anyway, and that was really interesting. So we know more about railroads than we wanted to. So
I think my takeaway of it, the thing that most impressed me overall, was the fact that a couple of people had mentioned that the town or downtown area of Ellensburg had really gone through a bit of a renaissance, and it was because of their historic preservation programs. And just 6-8 years ago, their downtown was pretty much vacant. And by promoting some of these programs and working with DAP, working with the Main Streets program, they're able to pretty much fill all of their vacancy downtown. It's really turned into a vibrant area with lots of small businesses. And so it's a lesson that shows that historic preservation works. And, you know, some of the things that we try to do locally with the Heritage District overlay and so forth, those are worthwhile causes, and they ultimately have a benefit to the community. So I think Ellensburg is a good case study.
Yeah, in fact, the iconic building that you see right there in the corner, right behind that is what's called the Elvira Hotel. And a guy who's an electrician I met him bought it, and he was in the process, and he's remodeling that into apartments, condos. And they used to have a skyway to the main building there in Ellensburg. So anyway, he was talking about this: the city and the county is giving him all kinds of economic incentives. He's not even a big developer. He's an electrician who's under. And we went through that building, and it was in really bad shape. I kept thinking it was in better shape than this, but not by a whole lot. There were fires and all kinds of things. So that was really interesting. I want to go back and see the Elvira Hotel after it's done.
Okay, well, thank you. I'll try to get through the next couple things fairly quickly. And then my agenda is way timed off. I didn't take into account the tour, that's why. So I just wanted to let you all know that it looks like we've got a healthy fund for the 2018 Historical Promotion Grant. So we'll probably be opening up the application period in later this month. So we'll be in the same kind of time frame, due in mid to late September. So we'll be asking for our volunteer committee that reviews the applications, probably at our August meeting, to see who might be interested in participating in that. Just going to give you a heads up on that. Any questions about the promotion grant? And the last thing is, I just wanted to keep you all updated. You know, we get notified if there's a Section 106 in Clark County, that means a federal permit has been required for some kind of development or change, like a new bridge or something. I think we've talked about a couple years ago, there was a bridge that we participated
Cedar
in.
Cedar Creek Bridge.
And this one came out pretty recently. It's eligible for the National Register barn that's going to be have to be taken down for a new development. So we're a part of the mitigation discussion and interested parties. So
but there's an MOA being drafted right now for
So yeah, we'll be participating in that. So right now it's just kind of coming up with some mitigation options. Right.
Yeah, and I'm a paid consultant on the project, so I'm part of the phone calls, and then, you know, we're having phone calls every 2 weeks while we get through the MOA process, and so the Corps identified the HPC as a potentially interested party, so reached out to Jackie about it, and I was like, well, I'm going to recuse myself from it on that end, but if you guys need any updates or anything, I'll be on those phone calls every 2 weeks. So.
So we'll share with you what the mitigation proposals are, what's decided by this group, and it looks like it's probably going to be some kind of documentation of the barn, maybe some interpretation elements.
Yeah, and they're going to try to reuse the materials. If there's a guy who does barn deconstruction and reuse, materials reuse, and he's got a project up in
That's
Tenino.
A big thing right now.
Yes. barns are a big thing right now. Anyway, he's got a project up in Tenino where he wants to reuse some of the materials, and everybody's on board with it. And he's also talking about on-site reuse of making a gazebo as part of the thing. So, There's options to be thrown.
So I'm letting you know because we are have Sharon on calls to kind of represent and listen to what's being discussed. So once there's probably a draft in a way, final draft, whatever they call it, we'll share that with you.
Great.
So that's that.
All right. Thank you, Jackie. Any other new business or announcements anybody wants to talk about before we move on to public comment? Okay. If not, I'll open the meeting up to public comment this evening.
Can I ask a quick question? I think my hair is going sometimes really softly. In regards to this campus, is it on the National Registry?
Yes.
Yes.
No. The National Register has benefits associated with it, but the
keeping
only
them.
For keeping them, but the only consequence for damaging a National Register historic site is they might actually kick you off the list and you lose the benefits. But what they're proposing, the National Register won't kick them off for that.
We still in Buffalo, and we have the Richardson Complex, which is, I don't know if you're familiar with it, it's huge, it's a state site, but it's also gorgeous, because I was one of these signature buildings. And they wanted to do some demolition and the National Facility. So don't think about it. Fix it. It's worth saving.
And it might depend on who owns it, too. Yeah. You know, if it's publicly owned, then there might be.
It was publicly owned.
And if it's on a local list, like if this were on our local list, then we would have purview over whether they got a certificate of approval. But it's not. So they don't.
And do you generate funds from this building now to help support it?
Yes.
They do.
The owner. Yeah. It just doesn't generate enough to do capital improvements, but it keeps it operational, right?
Correct.
And then talking about if they can reuse these buildings rather than demolish them, there are plans to use them to generate more capital.
Thank you.
Do you have a name and everything?
What's your name again so I can look that down?
Robin Summers.
Robin, thank you. Yeah, if whoever's going to speak, can you just introduce yourself just so I can make sure I have it down? That'd be helpful for me.
Okay. Can I make a few comments?
You may.
Thank you so much. I'm Lisa Butet, and I'm going to stand just because I think sometimes you can hear me a little better. But first off, I just want to applaud the efforts of this and the communication. And I'm speaking mostly about the farm. And a lot of my involvement in that. But what I specifically want to say is I really applaud the ongoing process in it. I understand because I have gone to the farm advisories and the parks departments, and I've tried to involve myself with more of the interconnections of this group. And I feel so comfortable in knowing you guys that I hope I'm not causing you to get off of your agenda. So thank you, Jackie. That was kind of you said, oh. I understand that the Farm Advisory Group is going to look at updating the master plan. At least that is what they shared at the last meeting. There's quite a few developments, not just on the side that Robin and I live, but all the way around. And so specifically, my comment is that I'm really advocating strongly for keeping the cemetery open. And I just want to make three points in regards to, the why of all of that. First off, the security issues that are going on at the farm do not necessarily parlay onto the outer areas. As I'm sure all of you on this commission know, even Hazeldale Park is actually part of the farm property. It's leased back. There are things happening up. But to the security and specifics to, as we're talking proper about the cemetery, I would suggest strongly, and I would hope Robin would agree, you can speak out if you disagree, but I believe that the neighborhood has been a large part of that. Nothing has happened there. I understand, I know that there are no gravestones there, But the neighborhood has been significantly involved in helping trimming and mowing, and you'll see some of that, you know, when you come in. There's been county discussion, you know, in regards to that, and so I'm very pleased to hear that, especially Sarah, your comment about the split rail fence, because I was thinking, how in the world am I going to haul that mower up over the side? And it's not just from keeping it attractive and the hills rolling, it's also from a fire issue. You know, in Hazeldale, there are a lot of fireworks. And so our concern as homes that come up against there is also the fire. If I were on this commission years back, before those houses were built, I think I would have raised my hand and said, don't build those subdivisions. I love my home, but I think that they probably should not have ever been placed there. However, so the security, I just really don't think that over the cemetery is an issue. Next, I want to speak just a second point, historical aspects. And I love the idea of the four-cornered markers. I was at that public meeting as well. And if you look at the National Historic Register standards for that era of cemeteries, they are open rolling. The landscape is very significant. In fact, they were not straight landscape where, you know, they had the exact trees. They were more wavering and such, and it was sort of meandering in that. And so I would like to see the landscaping aspects, the stones, you know, put along. I think that that is a great idea. But my third, and you know, while it maybe shouldn't be a critical point, I think for my neighborhood, I would be remiss if I didn't say this. Public access has been a huge issue. It has been a public issue, and as my background is marketing and my master's in education, but it's such a huge issue. I know that we talk about things improper and when we go visit things, you know, okay, we all come in, but that's not really how neighborhoods interact with space. And just like this building, it wouldn't work if you only had one entrance to come around. And so ideally, I would love to see gates open and closed, just like they are closed at the main portion. But those gates, there's huge issue over whether it should be gardeners, and there's a lot of food industry interaction going on in there, and sometimes, you know, it's not very welcoming to have people who want to meander through. But there has been, I'm going to put this out there for you guys, but I put it out there for others, and others have said that when the master planning was 10 years back, it was never considered. But I know that the house I live in wasn't there at the time. Having access should be more than just going up into the front gate. It's about community protections, how communities interact, and how they participate with many of these historic places. And so ideally, I would love to see the perimeter fence at least be 6 foot in all the way around, and have a path all the way around, which would also allow for education, for marketing, because as you visit around, if you're walking, and, you know, as you know, in the summertime, it's not going to get dark until 9 o'clock at night. And no one would be able to appreciate or enjoy that space, because that space closes up. There's not staffing to oversee that. But I would love, and it's been pointed out to me, oh, Lisa, you could have hundreds of people coming by. Well, I do love to converse, you know, not just on these issues. But it would be lovely, and my neighbors have asked if they could have access through my yard. I don't know if they've ever asked through your yard, but your gate's a little more unobtrusive. But, you know, and I've been advised legally I should not allow people, because then my yard could become a public thoroughfare, and not that I would want to go down in history that way, but anyway, you know, my last point is public access, and I just want to suggest to you that there are thousands of people that live all the way around that farm property, and how lovely it would be if we could all access around. But just as a, this is a Lisa comment, it's not part of my 3 points, I my cat Catholic background sometimes just overcomes me. And it was shared with me that when that fence, the cyclone fence, that I think you have a picture in your packet of, when that comes down, that at one point it was thought that that would become a path. And I said, oh, to me it would be completely inappropriate for a path to go over graves. There are graves where that fence is, and it would be completely inappropriate. But that said, I would much rather see the path come all the way up to my property and have people walking through that way and being respectful of that space, as opposed to having that path come through. But I would love to be a part of the marketing and educational efforts that go into how we can get people to appreciate this and not just have it a space where there's a fight over whether you're a gardener. If you've been to the other meetings, that's kind of where there's a separation. If you're not a gardener, you shouldn't be on the property. And I think that we need to, you know, we can have the same argument over people who appreciate towers. You know, I'm in the group of, I love that tower, and I'm thinking in my head, how in the world could we do that? But anyway, that's just me. I thank you so much for all of your wonderful listening ears and allowing me to also learn some of the different comments through the, never thought I would be following so closely the work of this. I want you to know I do not just care about the farm. That's my final comment, but thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa.
Sure. There was discussion about the fence. Should we move it to the east? Should we move it to the west? I'm right on the western boundary, and along with two or three other neighbors, and having another fence, butting up the fence, up against the fence that's already there, limits my ability to maintain my fence. It would be nice if we had a little space there. Actually, if we have to have a cyclone fence, we can take the barbed wire off. But your idea of a foliage fence is great. You can make a hedge go out of the blackberry. Solid ice. Really? I'm serious. Nobody goes anywhere. There are also some significant trees on the western side, just inside the boundary. And I guess you'd have to drive around and if you put a fence there. Because if there's a dug fir, it's at least 100 feet high. There's some really big old cherries, and maybe it's a trash tree, but there's still all the beautiful trees. We need to preserve it. I'll roll them all. Thank you.
Thank you. Have any other public comments this evening? No? All right. Well, thank you for attending. If there's no more public comment, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn from the commission.
We adjourn.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. June meeting adjourned.
Thank you.
Did we still?
Second.
The 4th of July, or this on Tuesday of July, and of course not going to have a meeting. I don't have any cases that have come in. Have you? So unless you want to meet for some other business.
This is going to be July what? How close to 4th weekend
is it? It is the 4th.
Oh. Well, that's all the more reason to do it.
I won't be in town that week, actually, so I'll be tied up.
Okay. Okay.
I won't be making a decision on that one. Good decision. Bye.
That would make for a spirited meeting.
So, I'll be able to get to the
And I saw this courtyard. I've never been here before. And I brought my hat because I thought it was going to be outside. So I didn't know it was a courtyard room. Good to see you again.
Good to have your hat.
See you, James.
Thank you for having the show.